This is truth be told.
That not only are there reptilians here,
new evidence of UFO fleets.
We were close to nuclear war.
To help you transform so that you can live your highest truth.
We're not being told just because we're not ready for it.
Geo stations of frequency, vibrational.
I was a homicide detective with LAPD.
UFOs increase. Visitations. When I started Truth Be Told, I really wanted to find out the truth through the experiences of researchers, authors, experts from all around the world in the genre of paranormal. But the icon, such as a truth seeker, we have on the show today. We have the legendary UFO researcher, award-winning journalist, Linda Moultonhowe, on the show today to talk about her second season of Truth Hunter on Gaia. But also, what is the latest in disclosure? What new revelation of UFO research that can change the world as we know it? Well, if anybody can answer those questions, we have the one and only Linda Moultonhowe on the show. I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome to the Truth Be Told studios for so many times the iconic UFO researcher, award-winning journalist, Linda Moultonhowe.
Thank you, Tony. It is good to be back with you.
It has been a while, and I'm so excited to have you here because, I mean, it's like in technology, in ufology and, you know, the research that you do, it changes so fast that we need someone like you that keeps up on all the latest. So, first of all, congratulations on a second season of Truth Hunter on Gaia. And so let's just start with that. And what's the new season consist of, and what can we expect?
It was extraordinary in production because Tim from Germany is an extraordinary intelligence. And in this Truth Hunter, we were trying to focus on Tim telling me that he had firsthand interactions with gray beings. And that is for openers about this man's extraordinary depth of intelligence and his perspective on the extraterrestrial biological entity subject goes beyond to other dimensions, not in a poetry way, not in a philosophical
right.
way. But his perception of the truth of the cosmos is that dimensions are the key and that we are in the third, and that for us to survive as the extraordinary species that we are with strong souls, that there are intelligences who would like to see humanity get from the third dimension through the fourth to the fifth. That in the fifth dimension, we would finally, as a species, be having the kind of life that I think the religious histories have discussed, where you would have peace on Earth for as long as you were in the fifth dimension. And what appeals to me is that we had in-depth discussions for days, Tim and I, about these kinds of questions, in which he has some insights that I have never heard from anybody that I have ever interviewed before. And so Truth Hunter in this new season is a Truth Hunter that is breaking new ground with a man who is mysterious, but forthcoming with his knowledge, and that the issues of dimensions as a reality as real as the matter universe we are in, but that there are multiple dimensions with different types of universes and life in them. And he contributes probably the deepest insights on that description of anybody that I've ever talked to as an investigative reporter.
And I've not heard of Tim before, and I'm glad you brought Tim to the forefront. But how did you discover Tim's path and his journey?
Gaia came into information about Tim.
Hmm.
Even working in the depth in which we were doing the interview, he is still mysterious in the sense that you ask him about the normal questions of addresses and phone numbers and where do you work and how long have you worked, and you will not get specific answers.
Hmm.
And so with those as the terms, we went and into these discussions with him and how it's all going to unfold, because he then becomes the truth hunter, knowledgeable person, but not somebody that we're going to be able to interact with on an ongoing basis. I think that one of the questions will be, will Tim be available to speak at certain conferences?
Mm.
And I hope that that does happen. But we are at such a frustrating time because it feels to me that we're in a revolution that is picking up energy. It is headed toward the whole issue. Are we alone in this universe? The answer, of course, is no. This is a universe and a dimension that we are in that is teeming with consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And that the challenge right now on the Earth is that the power brokers in all of the various governments have walked a path where don't let the general audience know anything about our relationship with extraterrestrial biological entities. And it's been like that since World War II. And that was a sort of a firm decision that was gained by Winston Churchill working with Eisenhower, working with Truman, that they all felt that the less that they said about interactions with extraterrestrials, the better, because they did not want to upend stock markets, religion, and so forth in the context of World War II. And sometimes I have sympathy with that decision, and other times I think, no, if they had told the whole truth,
right,
then, in that wartime that was revolutionary, I personally think we would have had a stronger, better evolution since World War II with the truth of this universe, the truth of other life forms. And we may have ended up working with some that could have helped us. Now we are in the 22nd century, and it appears that it is loaded with challenges. It is loaded with environmental problems. If we had had a peaceful, collaborative relationship with, say, the Tall Whites or the Nordics that are described as having at least an interest in seeing humanity evolve and survive, they might have been able to teach us.
Hmm.
They might have been able to help in a collaborative way, not taking over the planet for sure, but a collaborative teaching way, that by now, the assault that humans have done to the planet that is now going to make global warming and the catastrophes of climate reactions to a climbing temperature. Today in the New York Times, there was an article about a long study that has been being made by agencies in the United States government. And the shocking statement was that 90% of all counties in the United States, thousands of them, 90% of them in the last decade have had what is called major weather events in which there is death and property loss.
Hmm.
And if that is the last decade,
mm-hmm,
oh my Lord, seriously help us for this next decade. So those are the problems that we as a population reaching 8 billion officially in this month of November of 2022. 8 billion. I do not think that this planet evolved to have 8 billion humans on it. Yeah. And so will the predictions of people who have been in physics, who have been in the government, who told me in 2014, coming from physics and another from government, that the extraterrestrials that have collaborated with them recently, the Tall Whites and the Nordics, that they have painted a picture that will happen in which by the end of this decade in 2030, there has to be a reduction in the population of humans for the Earth to survive us. How will that occur? What will happen? Would it tie into Elon Musk saying 3 or 4 years ago that he had a goal to get 1 million people from Earth to Mars by 2050? Is getting people off the Earth into other planets going to be a, let's say, a healthy, evolving way for us to reduce the stress on this planet from a huge human population by getting some of the human population spread out into other planetary systems? Clearly, as I say that, in November of 2022, we don't have any of the systems in place that could do that. But Elon Musk says that he is already tasked to start getting people to Mars by 2026, that has been his goal to start it. So I think that whatever is going to happen between now, 2022 and 2030, it is going to have to include an introduction of the Homo sapiens sapien family on Earth with all of its problems due to population and having to use so many energy systems that involve getting methane into the air and the problem of global warming, that we're, if we could be introduced to the Tall Whites and the Nordics in a peaceful way in which friendliness and help could be proved, then maybe we could be in a decade that would do several things. Introduce other life forms. We would begin to be educated about where other life forms are and which are friendly, neutral, and hostile. Who in the friendly are going to help us protect humans from hostile, while we have to accept the fact that we must move out. We must move certain populations from the Earth to help the evolution in a healthy way of humans on Earth. And I know listening to all of this, it feels as if we are in such a troubled time, an uncertain time. And the truth is, we are. Saying that we will get to 2030 or 2050 safely as a population on Earth, saying the words doesn't change what could be an inevitable evolution in which it will be the climate changes of Earth itself that will end up reducing the human population. And that's what we're up against.
And I totally see that. I agree with you. And I do find it fascinating that NASA, just a few days ago, launched into space about going to deep space and, you know, going to the moon. And I was watching on one of the news channels about, you know, colonizing and
Artemis.
So
the new moon craft.
Right. And I just, you know, it's what been 50 years since or close to 50 years since we even attempted. And I find it fascinating that we are going now. And, you know, like you said, Elon Musk is talking about Mars. Why do you think it's all happening at once? Do you feel like this is part of that plan of reducing planetary humanity?
It's a good and reasonable question, Tony. And I wish that I had hard answers that I felt were close enough to the truth that I could say them without worry. But but that would be dishonest on my part.
Right.
I personally, based on all the environmental science medical reporting that I have done for 43 years, soon to go into the 44th year, this is a truly uncertain time that feels very dangerous to me. That's what I feel is tremendous danger. Hmm. And the danger comes from humans who are moving in politically unexpected and revolutionary ways about how they will be governed. The whole issue of which other intelligences have been inside of this planet, inside of the moon, inside of Ganymede, out in other solar systems, interacting with, having influence on the Earth for millennia. Hmm. That is, as far as I know, the truth. And when you realize that we are now in a decade where these two unexpected energies are coming together at one, the evolution of Homo sapiens sapiens for the last 45,000 years, the evolution of extraterrestrial biological entities that could be 10 billion years old. They're coming together at the same time where the ETs must be introduced to humans. It is abuse if they continue any further politically in governments of continuing to deny humans the truth. That is abuse. We're moving into a space age. It appears to be inevitable. And if we go into the space age, evolving, going out into other solar systems, right, having trade, getting rare metals, all sorts of things that could happen in a positive way, if humans are still left in the dark because it's easier to politically control the planet, that will be the worst mistake of all time. So in this revolution where we are becoming more sophisticated as a population species in the universe, becoming more sophisticated about, we're in a universe that has consciousness, that some of the great minds that have talked about, like David Bohm, the implicate order, that in the consciousness of the universe, there is a frequency in which communication takes place that does not mean that we have to walk someplace, go someplace to communicate. That the universe itself is uniquely created so that minds, bodies can communicate across light years, but that there are extraterrestrial intelligences that have gone way beyond where we are of essentially lighting a match to gasoline to launch things. No, we're dealing with other sophisticated intelligences that Tim in Germany on the New Truth Hunter knows a great deal about. And that is the tunneling, the quantum tunneling in this universe. It is made to move point to point. Eventually, I hope, humans will move. Like I could move from here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, to 10 light years away and do it in a second or 5 seconds or 10 seconds.
That would be amazing.
And that's the level at which the intelligence that is interacting with our Earth in a secret way, that's what they do. And part of the secrecy has been in collaboration with Truman, Churchill, Eisenhower, apparently communicating to other intelligences that they did not feel that humanity could take the revelation of other life in the universe. That literally was an argument during World War II. I disagree. I really disagree. I think that humans are built. I think our consciousness and our brains and our souls are built to reach a point where it's inevitable that we would know about other beings, but that it's more than that. If we are creatures who have souls, then souls mean, by definition, reincarnation, the machinery of this universe, as E.T. has said to some of the abductees, the machinery of your universe is the recycling of souls. Well, we need, as a species, we need a lot more information and education about the relationship between our biological containers that carry the soul in and out of moments of death and then reincarnation to life. What is that huge recycling system about for real? That's what I would like to know more about. I know that Tim in Germany, in the Truth Hunter series, in his insights about other dimensions, it's not poetry. This is the way this universe has been made, with multiple dimensions in which there are varying degrees of matter or other frequencies in those dimensions. And that part of the reason for the existence of consciousness is to learn why and how being in a third dimension must move into other dimensions. Evolution is what is expected. And that has not been taught Homo sapiens sapiens. And it needs to be.
I totally agree with that. And before we go into talking about more about the dimensions, I'd like to jump back in time a little bit. Because you said, you know, during World War II or after World War II, they really kind of wanted to keep this under wraps. What about before World War II, World War I, and even before that? Because human beings, even though we didn't have the mass media, even during World War II, they had movies, they had, you know, they did have start to get televisions and radio and, you know, all this stuff. But before that, we didn't have the mass media to where, you know, if an alien landed in Texas, it probably won't get heard on the East Coast for 6 months. So do you feel like the disclosure, but the meetings between the powers at be for the human side were met by aliens before that, you know, like the George Washingtons, the, you know, Napoleons, all these people that had power back in the day? Why didn't they introduce us to themselves before, you know, this mass hysteria where it could slowly leak out and from the leaders and where we're not so shocked about it?
Tony, humans have lived and worked side by side with extraterrestrial biological entities in the Anunnaki, the Akkadians, the Egyptians, that entire period.
Right.
What came to us almost like fairy tales.
Right.
Our lack of being educated as a species about the fact that the Anunnaki were extraterrestrials from another solar system in this universe.
Right.
That those that interacted with the Sumerians, with the Akkadians, with the Etruscans, and on in those periods of time, they were extraterrestrials. And people who had power inside of Egyptian and inside of Anunnaki and inside of Sumerian and Akkadian and Etruscan, there were humans who knew. But the decision was for the humans who were the power brokers, the interface between the humans and the ETs. They were the ones who would have the special knowledge, and the humans would be sort of kept over here, but they would still have had interactions with beings who were clearly not human.
Right.
And then you have to come face to face with the fact that the Anunnaki were a violent type of species. You cannot read all of the what I would say would be transcriptions, but the originals were stone.
Right.
All of it was in stone tablets, thousands and thousands and thousands of stone tablets, some of which are in museums. But that the humans who were used as why they were made, and this is coming down to a very important point in the history, the extraterrestrial came to Earth, the Anunnaki. Humans, as a civilization, as a species, were not here. When the Anunnaki came, they are the ones who manipulated DNA in already evolving primates to create Homo sapiens. That is a sentence, every word in a government document that I read in 1983. These extraterrestrial biological entities manipulated DNA in already evolving primates to create Homo sapiens. It's burned in my brain. Yeah, I can see the page. Well, when was the time period? See, the government documents don't put in timelines on purpose, so people can interpret anything that they want.
Right.
The Anunnaki were on this planet 12,000 years ago. They might have been here 12 million years ago, 112 million years ago, half a billion years ago. And that is a fact. Our knowledge, the carved rock that they left, the tablets, that relates to 12,000 years ago, and perhaps back as far as 18,000, maybe a little bit further. But essentially, the creation of Homo sapiens sapien in the crossfade with Neanderthalensis is 45,000 years ago, give or take. The Anunnaki were either living here and not recorded at that time period, or they had been here earlier.
Right.
Had done the DNA manipulation. They were successful. They now have a new species that starts living on Earth in parallel with Neanderthalensis, which was probably one of their experiments as well. And somebody in the Anunnaki makes a decision. They're going to take out one of their humanoid species and they're going to reinforce another. And the crossfade 45,000 years ago between Neanderthal going out, Cro-Magnon coming in, it is a puzzle to people who have studied that period because the Neanderthals had larger brain cases than next coming in humans. The Neanderthals clearly had spiritual knowledge. Because over and over again, Neanderthal whole graves can be a single one or like a cemetery.
Right.
And they, the archaeologists and anthropologists who have studied have found that the rectangles where the bodies were covered with seeds. That means that the Neanderthal families were putting flowers on the graves as we do today.
Mm-hmm.
They had a sense of a soul, helping the soul to move on. So why in the last 12,000 year cycle, why would the Anunnaki have been interacting with our Earth at a time when they were fighting each other with atomic nuclear bombs? And it's last night on my Earth Files YouTube channel program, I had plasma physicist John E. Brandenburg, who wrote a very incredible book called Death on Mars. It came out in 2015. It is a book that should have been reviewed in the New York Times. But see, when people come forth, even a plasma physicist with a PhD, with a book that says that there were atomic use of atomic bombs by the Anunnaki on Earth on Mars and beyond, then the world that we're living in wants to say, can't be true. If you want to write this as fiction, we'll review it as fiction, but we will not review it as nonfiction. So not a lot of people know about John E. Brandenburg, PhD, plasma physicist, book, Death on Mars. But it is an extraordinary book. And why would NASA, this happened, why would NASA invite Professor Dr. John E. Brandenburg to one of their large NASA conferences in September, 2 or 3 years ago? It was before COVID, so it must have been 2019, to present the hard science data that is behind Death on Mars. And that has to do with that the xenon 129 measurement on Mars was even made by Viking in 1906. You take the xenon 129 level, you take the levels of argon 40, you take the levels of krypton 80, and you start having a picture of what our scientists, after 1945, when we dropped the United States 3 atomic bombs, one in New Mexico was a test. Two were on Japan, Nagasaki and Hiroshima. And within that next decade of getting into the 50s, what were we doing? We did hydrogen bomb tests. And that means in the 10 to 12 years from the end of World War II because of the bombs, going for another decade or so until they were outlawed, we were contributing plutonium to the air. We were contributing all of these, what are called radioactive isotopes, that come into the atmosphere only when there is a thermonuclear event. The two go together. They aren't made by any other way except when there is an explosion in a sun and you have a supernova, you will then get some of the same radioisotopes that you get in a thermonuclear event.
Wow.
But if you had the explosion of a sun anywhere near this solar system, it would destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
Earth is here, the other planets are here, so nothing was destroyed. And yet, the levels of xenon 129 and argon 40 and on, what do we find on Mars? The same signature.
That's crazy.
The same radioactive particles in the same types of amounts, except xenon 129 on Mars, 2.5 times higher amount than was measured on Earth after we had three atomic bombs and hydrogen tests. And so Professor, he's actually not a professor. I should say he's a plasma physicist. He has done some teaching, but he works mostly for aerospace companies. He makes the hard point, the point that's hard to ignore, that when you have the same signature from World War II, after World War II, and then you are examining what is in the atmosphere on Mars from Viking on, and they look the same except xenon 129 is 2.5 times greater, what can you conclude? That a thermonuclear event has occurred on Mars at some unknown point, and now jump to back to Earth 12,000 years ago. The Anunnaki, in all of their stone tablets and communication with the humans that they made to be workers for them, the tablets are all about the fight between two Anunnaki brothers, Enlil and Enki, over how humans will be handled and what will happen on the earth. And Enki and Marduk, and some argue that humans are special and we should be protected. Enlil says no. And Enlil is the one who calls for what they called the evil darkness. And that is the radioactivity, because they knew they'd already used nuclear bombs other places. On Mars is the implication. And that on Earth, where there is trinitite, green, glassy nodules that we know were at ground zero when we did the test at the Trinity site in New Mexico on July 16th, 1945, all of this green, glassy was so mysterious to the scientists at the time. Eventually, after much study, the conclusion by physicists is any place that you would have a thermonuclear event that has sand, sand is silicon. The sand, silicon, is sucked up in the huge, huge energy systems of the bomb, whether hydrogen or atomic. So the sand comes up. It gets up into thousands of degrees Fahrenheit or centigrade inside of the thermonuclear event. It melts, and then in a liquid form, the silicon falls as liquid down to the sand, and that is where it has been transformed into this green, glassy material that is found not just at the Trinity site in New Mexico.
It is found
in Pakistan. It is found in Iraq. It is found in Liberia, in Africa. And that is where the hypothesis is by John Brandenburg, the plasma physicist, that where there has been trinitite on this planet, it is directly related to the atomic nuclear attacks of Enlil, described in these many, many tablets that Enlil wanted to wipe out humanity. And that there was a lot of death. But either they left, or something happened, or the tall whites and the Nordics came, other ETs, it's unclear, because there was this assault by the Enlil group against humans, and that it left residues of trinitite.
Wow.
And the trinitite then would be the haunting, through the pages of history, the haunting evidence of thermonuclear technology 12,000 years ago, maybe a lot earlier. John Brandenburg places what he thinks was the timeline on Mars as 180 million years from studies they have done on rock, where some rock has no radioactive particles and others do. And then they study the rocks, and the rocks give them timelines. Well, 180 million years ago, that seems like it's out of the, it's way beyond humans being able to relate to anything here as Anunnaki and
human. Right.
Well, the as far as I know, from a Defense Intelligence Agency analyst who wanted to meet me on purpose to pass me information when he was retiring from the DIA, contacted a man who worked at the World Bank who knew me and knew of my work about the whole UFO ET complicated thing. And the World Bank man in December, or early December of 1999, got a hold of me where I was living and working in Philadelphia at the time, explained that he had a colleague at the Defense Intelligence Agency, which is considered a very, probably has as much or more information and interaction with ETs on this planet as any agency. And that the DIA analyst was retiring, and that he had read some of my work. The World Bank man had met me at conferences. They had talked about my work, and he wanted to meet me before he totally left Washington and the DIA. So it took a month to arrange this meeting. And it was quite clever where he chose it. We left it up to the DIA analyst to choose. It was a place where we could have lunch and then walk quite a ways to where there were boats, lots and lots of boats. And as we moved toward the boats, there was a bench where we could sit and talk. And as he led us, it was myself, the World Bank friend, and the DIA analyst. As we went to sit down at the bench area, he looked up and he said, loud enough for us to hear over all of the boat noise, "I don't think that our satellites can penetrate this white noise." That's his actual words as we said that. And in 7 hours, we talked for 7 hours, and our bladders couldn't go any longer. He began with, "My job has been to study and analyze the conflict and competition of three extraterrestrial civilizations that have been warring with each other and based in this solar system for at least 270 million years. And yet our government has proof of this, Linda."
Wow.
That's how the meeting began. And I said, "What proof does our government have of 270 million years? And he said, "If I told you, it would endanger both of our lives."
Oh, wow.
And the rest of the 7 hour went into so many insights about how humans are babies in this whole huge drama. And that we don't even consider the fact that if you are a highly advanced extraterrestrial civilization and you can move point to point by doing quantum tunneling through the fabric of the universe, when you come into a new solar system, you have computers that are analyzing planet from the core out. I remember his words. ETs analyze planets from the core out. When their computers give them whatever they are in, what kind, they will know how many huge caverns are in which planet. They will know how much water, how much rockiness, how much ice. They will know everything about the climates. The computers will be doing projections of what happens on each of the planets that they are surveying. And on Earth, they knew immediately this was a perfect hotel. There would be surface life, but not them. They would go deep into the huge caverns, which only last year, for the first time, are geophysicists reporting, and it's making science journals, about huge, huge, gigantic, vacuous areas that exist. Here's the crust of the Earth. It's only 5 to 25 miles on what humanity lives. If you go 5 to 25 miles, you are now getting into an area of the planet that can have volcanic channels that would come out as volcanoes. But it doesn't mean that the whole crust of the Earth is sitting on lava. No. there are many, many parts of our planet that when you come out of the, we'll call it the orange rind surface that we live on, that you come into gigantic, they're hollow. And then people get confused and they can't comprehend that this could be on the same planet, that at the center of the planet is an iron core that is two-thirds the size of our moon. That's how big the iron is, the core. And that iron core is turning in liquid, liquefied iron and nickel. That's what produces the magnetic fields that go out through the Earth. And those magnetic fields that are so strong on our planet help protect us in many, many ways. But still, above all of that are these gigantic, cavernous, empty spaces. And that's where ETs have come to base.
Oh.
And it's like a hotel because there's the surface life, then there are the different levels.
Right.
And another important part that he taught me about, he said there are extraterrestrials who prefer always to go down below the basins of any water on any planet, that the water itself is a huge protection. And in their ability for the computers to show them every single thing about every planet and moon, they can see where, let's say, in the Atlantic Ocean, if you go down to the entire base of the Atlantic Ocean and you go off the northern coast of this African continent and across from this European, that there is a Mediterranean that will go down and down and down, that there are other parts of the ocean that they can go down and down and down, and they're not competing with any lava, no volcanoes, and that a lot of ETs have based, it's beneath, here's the water.
Right.
And this is the basin. They go through. They know how to go into the caverns in one swoop from outer space, coming in crafts that can come through our air at 12,000 miles an hour.
Oh, my God.
Enter water without any change on the craft. We can't do anything like that.
Wow.
And go down through the water and then change completely without ever stopping. They go through matter. They go through the basins of the oceans and the seas, and they come out in other spaces where they want to live.
Well,
and what I'm describing, even though it sounds
I love it. And unfortunately, we ran out of time, but I could talk to you for 7 hours like you did with this gentleman. But unfortunately, we ran out. But I'm excited because we can continue this conversation because on April 1st, 2023, Linda Moulton Howe is going to be honored for the first annual Parapod Festival with the Lifetime Achievement Award. And we're so excited and honored to have Linda coming and speaking at the conference. And everybody in the local area or all around the country can come and be a part of it. You can get your tickets at parapodfestival.com. So, Linda, I'm so excited that you accepted this honor because I have been a fan of yours from day one, and you know,
back a long time,
and but you've been doing this way longer than I have even been in this, you know, paranormal, whatever you want to call it, genre. And I've learned so much from you, and I've just admired you from afar too, as because you are one of the true icons of this ufology or whatever you want to call it.
Let's call it, I am a humble investigator, humbled continually by what I do learn about the fact that humanity is one life form in a universe that is 13.8 billion years old.
Oh my gosh.
And that in this huge universe, there are who knows how many, maybe a trillion other consciousnesses. and that we humans have been denied that knowledge, and that there couldn't be anything more important to me in this particular life than to try to penetrate what is the truth and try to share it with my fellow human beings, because we're in a huge universe, but it's not the only one. And we are in a dimension of many dimensions. And what could be more exciting than learning the true truth about the cosmos that we are in?
Yes.
And then the biggest thought of all is in the Nag Hammadi, coming out of some of the brilliant, brilliant insights that humans began to learn from other beings in the Middle East, the thought that dwells in the light. That is the level of the divine field that would like to see all created souls choose light and truth in all of these vast universes where dark and non-untruth lies are competing always for attention. And that if we would just know that it is learning how to every day of our lives to relate to the thought that dwells in the light, that is where we should be headed.
Amen.
And it wants us to succeed. And that is why I do the work that I do.
Well, we thank you. And we thank you for being on Truth Be Told, participating in Parapod Festival. And make sure you go to earthfiles.com. You can read all kinds of stuff. Go on YouTube, follow her. Congratulations on your amazing YouTube channel.
And now we're 222,000 subscribers.
Woo! I'm excited. I'm so excited for you. And seriously, I really appreciate you. And also, go to Gaia, watch Truth Hunters, and Linda and Tim. I've been watching it. It's amazing. I think you guys are going to learn so much. And Linda, we love you, and thank you so much again for being who you are.
Agape hug.
Agape hug. Oh, you're going to get one. You're going to get a nice squeeze for me when I see you.
All
right. So, well, thank you so much. And everybody, please subscribe and share this show. And please, like I said, support Linda if you haven't followed her, which it's hard to believe nobody has not heard of you, because everybody knows you and loves you. So, but until next time, I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Take care of yourselves, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
This has been another episode of Truth Be Told. Thank you so much for watching. Recorded live at UBN Go Studios in Burbank, California. Join us on social media. Facebook, Truth Be Told Radio. Instagram, Truth Be Told Paranormal. Go to Truth Be Told Worldwide for more information on upcoming shows.